Scientists say they're gaining insight into how the brain rewires itself as it learns new things, potentially helping them move forward towards better treatment for mental illness and brain injuries. Researchers report in a new study published in the August 8th issue of the journal Cell that a protein appears to tell the brain that it's time to start rewiring because new information is coming in. Dr. Takao Hench is a leading brain plasticity researcher with Harvard University Center for Brain Science, professor of molecular and cellular biology at Harvard University, and professor of neurology at Boston Children's Hospital, Harvard Medical School. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Can you define the term brain plasticity?
Yes. Brain plasticity is the most essential feature of brain function. It's the property that allows neural circuits to rewire or reconnect in response to experience.
Under what conditions does one commonly see the physical or neurological evidence of this phenomenon?
Oh, there are many instances when you can see neural plasticity or brain plasticity. In response to nerve injury, you can observe growth, reconnection of circuits. But most interestingly, perhaps, you see it throughout life in situations of learning, say in the classroom or out on the playing field. And what's interesting is that the plasticity is elevated at different times in life.
Is there, and that takes me to my next question, do you see a progression or a diminution of plasticity as the brain ages?
Well, in general, it's thought that the young brain is more plastic or more flexible in response to sensory experience. And this gives rise to the idea of critical or sensitive periods in development mm-hmm. when different brain functions are rapidly getting wired up.
Now, turning to your research, what was the basic science behind it?
So we're interested in critical periods and why the young brain is so much more flexible than the adult brain. And while we would love to understand eventually things like human language acquisition as a classic example of this, we turn to animal models because we can better study the cellular and molecular details. The study that we've done most extensively is work on the visual system because we can study relatively easily the influence of left eye versus right eye input mm-hmm. into the visual pathway. And this builds on decades of research originally started by two Harvard researchers, Hubel and Wiesel, who won the Nobel Prize for defining this very dramatic form of brain plasticity.
So what was the study design and what were you trying to observe?
Right. So it's known from mouse to man now that if there's an imbalance in visual input, say the left eye is occluded at birth, let's say in a human, due to a cataract or some kind of opacity in the eye, then a dramatic plasticity is occurring in the visual cortex, which receives, for the first time, left eye and right eye inputs converging onto single neurons. And the brain rewires itself, essentially, to favor the open, mm-hmm. more salient input. And so we study this process in a mouse model, where similarly, if one eye is simply patched or covered, then if it's during a critical period, the neural circuits representing the open eye will be strengthened, and those serving the deprived eye are weakened.
What was the mechanism, though, when you look at this? And it's very similar to we had an interview with a Dr. Doherty last a week or two ago looking at amblyopia and mm-hmm. how in children, if you get past the age of 9, that eye will not recover. The brain will not recognize the inputs coming from the weakened eye.
Right.
But there has to be some sort of signaling mechanism to tell the nerves to rewire themselves or at least provide them with the information to know what to do. What were your observations regarding that?
Right. So, indeed, this is a model of amblyopia, the permanent loss of visual acuity through an eye deprived of vision early in life. And it is a major clinical challenge to recover from this amblyopia. Basically, it's believed that the activity of the eyes, the act of seeing itself, greatly favors the open eye. It's receiving visual inputs, and the deprived eye is very poorly transmitting information. And so for decades, people have suspected that this simple imbalance in neural impulse, the total number of spikes or action potentials that are generated through one eye or the other, will cause the plasticity to occur. But what we found was that in addition to neural impulses, perhaps the eyes are transmitting a little molecular messenger, which initially allows the cortex to become plastic, basically switches on the brain plasticity. Mm-hmm.
So in other words, there's an inherent mechanism in the brain. We'll call this mechanism plasticity, mm-hmm. but in order for that mechanism to be engaged, there has to be an initiating signal to tell it, okay, in this area, this is where I want you to start changing to adapt to the information that you are receiving.
That's correct, yeah. That's the surprising finding.
So have you identified the messenger?
Right. So this work builds on about 15 years of work in our lab, identifying, first of all, that a particular cell in the visual cortex is a triggering cell for this plasticity. And this cell is labeled by a marker called parvalbumin, or PV for short. And so the study was motivated by finding which factors actually cause the maturation of these PV cells, because if you could determine that, you would know why this critical period for amblyopia mm-hmm. Occurs when it does. And so this study identified this at least one such factor, and the surprise, first of all, was that it's a homeoprotein, which is a type of molecule that's used very heavily early in embryonic life to, in this case, set up the head or major regions of the body. And a molecule that is called OTX2, which is used for early head formation, seems to make a rather specific reappearance after birth in the visual pathway. And that's what we focused on.
So now, what are the implications of this in terms of future study and trying to identify whether these are the sole proteins or messengers available? Are they specific to the eye itself? And are there other areas of the body or the brain that have other messengers that can follow a similar lead?
Right. So it was surprising. There were two surprises in the study. I've mentioned both of them. The first is that an early embryonic factor seems to be reused in a pathway-specific way to allow brain plasticity after birth. And we believe the visual system is a general model. So that would mean other systems, say the auditory system or the somatosensory pathways or the olfactory pathways, may each have such a homeoprotein factor that specifies the timing when the brain should become plastic. The second surprise was the mode of action. These homeoproteins are so-called transcription factors, which turn on the synthesis of mRNA from DNA and allow proteins eventually to be mm-hmm. synthesized. It was long thought that homeoproteins would obviously be used by the cells that generate them. But in this case, although we could see the protein itself in the PV cells of the cortex, there was no evidence whatsoever that they actually contain the DNA or the mRNA for the OTX2, suggesting that the messenger had to be synthesized elsewhere and then transported into the visual cortex. And through a lengthy series of studies in this paper, we found that actually subcortical, so lower relay stations in the visual pathway from the eye heading up to the visual cortex, did synthesize this protein. And in fact, we could manipulate the onset of plasticity in the visual cortex by adjusting the level of OTX2 in the eye. And so it really sets our thinking on end. Initially, we thought that the cortex was developing on some kind of clock, which allowed gene programs for plasticity to be turned on or turned off at the appropriate time. But what we found now is that this clock actually is triggered by a message from the periphery, from the eye itself. And so it's not until the eye is open and functional that it can start to transmit this molecule to the brain.
So in other words, what we see can influence through this messenger how the brain responds. It's absolutely fascinating.
Right. So it's fascinating from an academic point of view that it's actually the peripheral sense organs that are telling the brain when to become plastic, that, okay, now I'm seeing properly, visual input, relevant visual input is coming in. Now is the time to start rewiring. But it's also interesting from a therapeutic point mm-hmm. of view, because we could potentially access the level of brain plasticity from the eye, as opposed to having to go into the brain directly.
And what, where does this research take you now? What, how is it branching off with regards to the next next step and studies that you're planning?
Right. So obviously, this is a rather unexpected mode of operation, and so we'd love to know how is it that the eye sends this message up into the visual cortex. We know a little bit already that it's activity dependent. So if animals are kept in complete darkness and never allowed to see anything, the messenger doesn't arrive into the visual cortex. So there is some component of this that requires neural signaling. And the second question we're interested in is, what does it do once it gets to the visual cortex? We know that it's rather interestingly localized to these PV cells I mentioned earlier, and it seems to cause their maturation, their final maturation, into fully functional inhibitory interneurons. And being a transcription factor, we would want to know, what are the genes that are activated by OTX2? Does it actually work at the transcriptional level or at the translational level to make proteins locally as opposed to going into the nucleus? So it's become a very cell biological question now. How does this molecule move, and then what does it activate?
Dr. Tikal Hench is leading brain plasticity researcher with Harvard University Center for Brain Science, professor of molecular and cellular biology at Harvard University, and professor of neurology at Boston Children's Hospital, Harvard Medical School. And Dr. Hench, I'd like to thank you very much for this really an exciting understanding of brain plasticity and the mechanism behind it. And I would love to follow up with you as you continue on with your research and learning about not only the mechanism, but the implications of this and how this can potentially be used in a therapeutic way to help repair areas of the brain that may have been damaged. We're certainly a long ways away, but nevertheless, it's opening up an area of understanding that we hadn't seen before.
Well, thank you very much.
All the best.
Thank you.
And we'll be taking your calls at 1-800-580-2372. You can certainly call in now for the second hour of our show, 1-800-580-2372. I'm Dr. Barry Dworkin, and you're listening to Sunday House Call.
You're listening to Dr. Barry Dworkin on Sunday House Call.